Less than 15% of the food that Iowans eat is actually grown in Iowa. A lot of people want to change that, and Iowa State University's Center for Sustainable Agriculture has a new plan. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The Iowa Local Food and Farm Plan has been submitted to the state legislature. It lays out 34 recommendations with the goal of getting more food grown in Iowa onto Iowa tables. My guests today are Rich Pirog, Associate Director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University, Michelle Kenyon-Brown, Executive Coordinator of the Johnson County Local Food Alliance, and Andrew Dunham, a fifth-generation farmer and proprietor of Grinnell Heritage Farm. We'll talk about the proposals in the new plan, what can be done to support local food on the state level, and what you can do. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa's agriculture may feed the world, but only about 14% of the food that Iowans eat is produced here in the state. Iowa State University's Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture recently released a report outlining concrete, feasible ways to expand the local food economy in the state. The report was requested by the state legislature last year. In a moment, I'll talk with some of the architects of the plan, some of the people that will be affected by the plan. But first, Iowa Public Radio's Kathleen Masterson will give us an overview. This piece was produced in conjunction with Harvest Public Media.
When we think of local food, we often think of farmers markets. Sunny Saturday mornings, rippled heirloom tomatoes, fragrant basil, and perhaps city dwellers with the time and money to shop there. And it is all that. But advocates and policymakers alike say they see a larger role for local foods in grocery stores, restaurants, and schools. Yet building effective working relationships along the path from farm to table is a challenge, says Rich Pirog, the Leopold Center's associate director and lead author of the report.
Many of these farmers, whether they be fruit and vegetable growers or direct market livestock producers or egg producers, they don't have as strong a support system as some of their larger mainstream farmers do in the state. So it does make a difference.
Pirog says the centerpiece of the plan is creating the position of a local food state coordinator.
Nobody is really playing that role, that liaison and coordinating role across all of the state agencies and the other state-funded institutions. So we're recommending funding for 1 year to start that position.
That's a big picture goal, but the report is also full of smaller, equally concrete suggestions to help producers develop better business plans and find markets. The report's authors gathered some ideas from talking with organizations already tackling these challenges.
Yeah, pork, please. Let's do the, yeah, that would be perfect. Yes, absolutely. What do you guys season it with?
A sign above the Burrito Works restaurant on the campus of Iowa State says that the pork comes from a Nyman Ranch farmer in Thornton, Iowa. Master student Michael Reed says that's why he chose pork.
So I'm a really big fan of looking at what food tastes like, what they use, what their practices are.
ISU dining director Nancy Lewandowski is also passionate about those homegrown flavors. And she says buying local food is an important way the university can support the community. Right now, about 10% of their food is local or organic, and their goal is to more than triple that number. Lewandowski says one of the challenges is figuring out how to coordinate with local farmers.
It takes a little more time on our staff. The hunting for, you know, you can get potatoes, but you can't get all of them from this one farmer, so we have to find another farmer to get the 100 potatoes so that we can let students know that these are all local potatoes.
In order not to have to phone up 20 farmers just to make hash browns, ISU Dining started developing contracts with local farmers. Last year, Julie and Scott Wilbur had a contract to grow green peppers, cabbage, and cucumbers. The Wilbers farm 22 acres in Boone, Iowa, and they say knowing that they have a buyer for a large volume of their product really helps.
I would love to have somebody say, we want you to grow 5 acres of cucumbers, and we're going to just take every single one and just and be like, well, almost like what corn and beans are right now. There's a market, and they can just take it and dump it off.
One of the suggestions in the Leopold Center's report is to create sample contracts and production agreements for local food sales. This would help assure farmers they have a buyer for their crop. And as more mainstream buyers are interested in local foods, it raises the issue of food safety. Tom Hoped is vice president of perishables at Hy-Vee, and the grocery store already buys a fair amount of local food.
It's not that the food isn't safe, it's being able to ensure that it's safe. You know, the processes of inspection are still developing, where when you're buying from large growers and you're buying, you know, national brands, they go through rigorous and very regulated processes in order to sell those items. It's not as defined when you're buying local.
There are programs that teach how to grow, wash, and box food safely, which many farmers already take advantage of. The Leopold Center plan recommends offering more regular sessions. The report contains more than 30 concrete suggestions to create a strong local food system. Senator Joe Tseng is the chair of the Agriculture Committee, and he says there is bipartisan support for expanding local food production.
I think we can actually have a better product, especially grown locally, as far as freshness and quality.
And Senator Tseng says that supporting farm jobs ties directly into boosting the economic situation of the state, which is the main focus of the legislature right now. I'm Kathleen Masterson, Iowa Public Radio News.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and with me now are some of the people who helped put the Iowa Local Food and Farm Plan together, also some of the people who will be affected by this plan. Rich Pirog is Associate Director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning.
Michelle Kenyon Brown is also here. She's Executive Coordinator of the Johnson County Local Food Alliance. Hello, Michelle.
Good morning.
And Andrew Dunham's with us as well. He's a fifth-generation farmer and proprietor of Grinnell Heritage Farm. Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
Thanks a lot for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
And Rich, I want to start with you. On Talk of Iowa, over the past several months, we've been talking a lot about the local food movement, and we've been talking a lot about the producers of this local food. And the thing that I've heard again and again is that right now, demand is growing exponentially, and demand far exceeds the supply of this kind of food in the state of Iowa. Local food is growing. Why do we need a plan to make it happen?
The reasons behind the plan are multifold, but the what we have seen in the work we've done over the last 15 to 20 years as local food commerce has increased steadily in the state of Iowa is in order for us to be able to further build that local food economy beyond just farmers markets and community-supported agriculture enterprises where farmers sell subscriptions to consumers and then deliver to a central point or to their homes. We've seen great increases and growth in farmers markets and CSAs. But we need a more supportive infrastructure and incentives and policies to be able to support farmers and meat processors and other food processors, other players in the food system to be able to build that robust local food economy. And so the process that we've set out over the last 6 to 7 months after receiving this mandate from the legislature to develop a local food and farm plan with funding and policy recommendations has been a real journey for us, a learning journey for many of the farmers and other participants in the plan. And we've tried to put together some real actionable recommendations. That was the charge from the representatives and senators who sponsored the amendment. They need to be clear and actionable, and we need to be able to put this together in a kind of way so it really would form an overall strategy to grow local food in the state.
Michelle, I'm sure that there are people listening right now who think, you know, corn and soybeans are very profitable. Farmers who are farming corn and soybeans right now are doing well. What are some of the benefits to having a strong local food culture in the state of Iowa?
Well, we can have an entire show just discussing the benefits of local foods. I would say that the local foods are a driver of local and state economic development. By keeping our food dollars in the state, we keep jobs and tax dollars in the state as well. Transportation costs to the budget and to our climate will be reduced. Many issues that could be brought up on this topic, food security, know your farmer, food relationships. Those are all main benefits of having local foods.
And, of course, we'll talk more about some of the benefits in depth as we go on today. Andrew, I want to ask you, Rich was alluding to the fact that the infrastructure that we have here in the state of Iowa right now is geared to the corn and soybean and the big pork and the big beef farmers in the state. What are some of the obstacles that people in your line of work who are trying to supply this local food demand face because of that infrastructure?
I don't know if the infrastructure necessarily gets in the way, but
We have difficulty selling to certain institutions because they have agreements with food service providers where they have to take all of their produce from a certain supplier if they get it at all from them. So we have certain restaurants that we can't sell to because they have a licensing agreement or a marketing agreement with a certain food service company. So that makes it very difficult. It's hard, like for Iowa State. I've looked at their contract system, and they want all of their produce when school starts. So you're not really talking about providing food to them until maybe late August. So with a pepper crop, what are you going to do with your peppers the month and a half or 2 months before that when they're starting to come into season? So those are some of the obstacles, I'd say.
Okay. And for you, you're a fifth-generation farmer. When you decided that you wanted to be involved in this kind of farming on fruits and vegetables, providing local food, did you meet any kind of a cultural resistance in your family?
My family's been really supportive. If you look at some of the simple numbers associated with corn and soybeans, we only have about 75 acres here. And if I were to farm corn and soybeans on 75 acres, and I don't have access to other ground, I definitely would have to have an off-farm job. And doing this, I can be fully employed here growing vegetables on just 10 acres. So
what drove your decision? Was it a financial decision?
I really like working outside. I like being my own boss. I like physical activity, just the lifestyle. A lot of those things kind of fit. And I really like to eat good food. So a lot of that was those were the deciding factors, I guess.
Well, let's get more into the plan, some of the big steps that could be taken if this plan is put into action. And one of the first things that would be done, Rich, is to hire a local food and farm state coordinator. We just have a moment left before our break, but can you outline briefly what that person would do?
Sure. That person would be hired more of a permanent position, but would only asking for state funds for the first year. And that person would do a number of things, including coordinating programs across state agencies and state-funded educational institutions, be able to collect more data on sales of local food within those institutions and coordinate that data and help a number of the organizations and agencies that work with farmers develop some model programs out there in our communities that not only chart sales, but look at what kind of impact do local food businesses really have in the communities. Do they increase jobs? Do they affect over time, if there are a lot of local food businesses, do they affect out-migration? These are things that are real important for the state's economy and for its communities.
We'll talk more about that in a moment. Today, we're talking about a new report released by the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University, the Local Food and Farm Plan. My guests today are Rich Pirog, he's Associate Director of the Leopold Center, Michelle Kenyon-Brown, Executive Coordinator of the Johnson County Local Food Alliance, and Andrew Dunham, a fifth-generation farmer and proprietor of Grinnell Heritage Farm. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about the local food movement, and in particular we're talking about a new plan put forward by Iowa State University's Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, a plan that outlines 34 steps that the Iowa State Legislature could take to make our local food economy much stronger in the future. My guests today are Rich Pirog. He's Associate Director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University, Michelle Kenyon-Brown, Executive Coordinator of the Johnson County Local Food Alliance, and Andrew Dunham, a fifth-generation farmer and proprietor of Grinnell Heritage Farm. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. If you have any questions about how this plan might affect you as a consumer of local foods or as a producer of local foods, you can join the conversation with your questions. Or if you want to weigh in on the discussion, let us know. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Now, Rich, right before the break, we were talking about what a local food and farm state coordinator would do. And you mentioned that this would be a one-year position funded by the state legislature, but then it would continue on and be funded independently after that. It sounds like when you're talking about the responsibilities of this person, that one of the big problems with local food in Iowa right now is that we just don't really know what's going on. Is that the case?
Well, we have a lot of really great programs around the state, and a lot of farmers selling local food, a lot of organizations, nonprofits, Extension Service, Resource Conservation and Development, many organizations helping support farmers. But the effort needs to be more coordinated, and we need to have the kind of a support system in place that growers can get more, say, synchronized technical assistance, financial assistance, rather than having to look so many different places to be able to build their businesses. And so in the first year we're requesting some funds for a state local food and farm coordinator position. After that year, however, what that person would also do in that first year is build a local food and farm program fund from voluntary sources. And the idea we came up with is patterned in part from the duck stamp and other conservation stamps, is to be able to generate proceeds from voluntary sales of collectible posters, stickers, and stamps that each year would depict a different piece of local food artwork. We estimate very conservatively that if this coordinator can help put together that program in that first year, that in the second year we could generate about $150,000. Plus, we also see as another potential source sales of a local food license plate, like we see with some of the other license plates. So, again, this would be voluntary. There's no tax. There's no burden on all Iowans. It would be the buyers and sellers that want to support local food that would pay for this. And it would not only fund the coordinator position, it would also start to provide seed funds for different programs and be able to use these resources to implement the other recommendations.
You mentioned that there might need to be some changes to state laws or changes to different programs to give further financial assistance to small-scale farmers, people who are producing fruits and vegetables to sell locally. Is there a bias against these kinds of organizations in the kind of agricultural assistance that we have right now in Iowa?
I don't think there's as so much a bias as there is an ability for smaller producers to be able to handle the transaction costs that might come with being able to sell to some of the larger volume markets. So as an example, and when we talk about food safety, as farmers may want to sell their local food to larger volume buyers like food retailers or food service management companies, in some situations, audits might be required, food safety audits. And other states have used some of their federal resources from the specialty grants crop program to help offset the cost of those audits for these farmers so that they're not paying $2,000 or $3,000 a year for an on-farm food safety audit. It's a part of the cost is covered. So the kind of recommendations that would not only provide some incentives, but also provide more opportunities for financial assistance in the way of loans and in some cases grants would also help our producers.
I also noticed that in the recommendations, you have a number of recommendations about things like reclassifying small meat plants as industrial property and have small meat processing facility investment credit program possibly involved in this. Is this a problem for small producers that they can't get some of the tax breaks that larger operations can receive?
Well, as we look at our small meat processing industry in the state, first of all, we have one of the largest and most effective meat processing industries in the country, and we still have a fair amount of infrastructure of small plants. What we want to do with these recommendations is make these small plants more competitive, more efficient, so that they would be able to help producers that are trying to market and develop different niche products so that they can get their products into these processing plants in shorter time frames. So we've seen with some of our work that we know that our small meat processing industry is also adding jobs and adding labor income to the state, but that these particular plants aren't getting the kind of assistance they need through technical assistance and help with modernization that could help these plants succeed. And you have to remember, you know, even with the use of greenhouses or high tunnels where we can extend the fruit and vegetable growing season, we can supply Iowa-grown meats all year round. And so it's real important that the recommendations include helping to strengthen the small meat processing industry and other food processing in Iowa.
Andrew, one of the problems that I know a lot of small growers in the state of Iowa have is that not only are they producing their foods and processing their foods, but they also have to market them as well. And we heard in the piece that Kathleen Masterson produced, we heard a farmer talking about the fact that with corn and soybeans, you have a market. You know where to go. You know who's going to buy that crop at the end of the season. What do you and your family and the other people who work on your farm have to do to market your products, Andrew?
We have a 200-member CSA, so people pay in advance of the season and then get a share or a box every week throughout the growing season. We attend four markets, so we do the downtown Des Moines Farmers Market every Saturday, the Iowa City Saturday Market, the Cedar Rapids Downtown Market, which is every other weekend for about 4 months, and then we also attend the Grinnell Market on Thursdays.
So you really have to do a lot more hands-on marketing of your own products.
We do. There are some advantages to that. We also sell a fair bit of stuff to New Pioneer Food Co-op in Coralville and Iowa City, and as far as contracts go, I think they have the best example in the state of how a contract should be worded. Mike Krogh is their local food purchaser, and he's the easiest person I've ever met in an institutional setting to work with. The hands-on marketing, the nice thing about that is you do capture more of the food dollar. So like at Farmers Market, you're capturing the whole food dollar. You get to have direct conversations with the end consumer, which is quite nice. So once you've built that up, it really isn't too hard to market. So,
Michelle, you wanted to weigh in?
Yes. We are working with the Iowa Corridor Food and Agriculture Coalition, which represents nine counties surrounding Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, to set up an event that will bring together small and large-scale food buyers with area farmers to help propel the local food market and generate new business. It is on February 18th at the Coralville Public Library if you're interested. But this type of event is sort of like speed dating for farmers and food brokers. It's a long time coming. And, Rich, I'm wondering if making these business love matches is something that the state Iowa Food and Farm Coordinator could be doing on a larger scale.
Definitely. There could be more of that activity going on. And, you know, these arrangements have to work for both sides. Obviously, producers need to be able to get the price they're needing to be able to make a profit, and the buyers need to be able to sell it at a price that consumers are willing to buy at. And it's important to know that, you know, when we talk about the local food movement and the local food economy, it isn't one type of producer, one type of processor. There's different sizes and scales. Some producers want to stay focused on CSAs and farmers markets and maybe selling to just a few retail outlets or restaurants. Others prefer to someone to do the marketing for them, and they're happy to sell to larger retailers like Hy-Vee, who've bought a lot of local food on a store-by-store basis over the years.
I'm going to bring Scott in Iowa City in on the conversation. And Scott, you're actually affiliated with New Pioneer Food Co-op, which is one of the organizations that buys a lot of local food. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Charity. How you doing?
I'm good. So let me ask you, and I know you have something you want to weigh in on the conversation.
Sure.
As well. But so as an organization that seeks out local food, has that process been becoming easier over the years?
Yes, it has. And, you know, Andy already, by the way, hi, Michelle and Rich and Andy. He already referenced the local grower program we have here at New Pioneer, where we formalize contracts with growers. That's getting better and better every year. And the potential, though, still is so untapped in terms of what's ahead of us in Iowa. And it's a very exciting time to be a part of the local foods movement. I mean, I was a participant in the Leopold Center's Farm and Food Plan working sessions, and I just applaud so much the efforts of Rich to take the lead on this. One thing that we're tackling here is the need for an increase in volume, obviously. It's at the institutional level. And I define that sort of roughly as the academic purchasers, the procurers for healthcare institutions and conventional grocers, et cetera. And that high volume simply cannot be attained currently without addressing the sort of what I call the 900-pound gorilla in the room. And that's, and Rich mentioned this briefly in terms of cost structure, but that's the extremely cheap imports that we're dealing with. And I'm certainly not going to demonize California produce producers, but really focus on a tone of creating a big tent partnership with everyone, and both on the public policy front through the Farm and Food Plan and at the private level. I mean, in terms of the budgets that we have even at New Pioneer, I mean, private buyers and growers have to be more creative with their offsets and their own budgets to make these deals happen. I was just talking to Senator Bolcom this last week, too, about this very thing, and he's going to be at our event in February. And, you know, I want him to work on a fair trade bill as well. I don't know how to craft that, but I know that I like the idea. And I guess one of my questions going forward would be subsidy shifts. For instance, I think that there is a lot of room for small local growers to get in on some of that. Now, you can debate the pros and cons of subsidies in general philosophically, but currently small vegetable producers like Andy have a really difficult time even getting crop insurance, let alone any subsidy structure. So, but again, it's just a very exciting time because there are so many different groups coming together to collaborate on this. So,
well, Scott, since you are a store involved in buying these local foods, what do you see as the things that local grocery stores or chains need as far as tools go to make these connections with local growers?
Well, it's a two-way street. I mean, we need to reach out to the growers, but the growers also have to knock on our door. And, you know, we're a relatively small player in the grocery pie. I mean, in the natural organic market still only is like 5% or less of the entire convention of the grocery industry. So, you know, that's why we're excited to have people like Hy-Vee coming to the table as well, because when we all put our money where our mouth is on this, we can move it forward.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for calling. And
thank you so much for taking my call, Charity.
All right, thanks a lot. And Rich, you know, Scott just mentioned that the local organic market is much smaller than the more traditional kind of market. But when we're talking about Iowa local food, we're not just talking about organically grown food, right?
No. Organic food is has a very specific definition and based on a set of production practices. Local food is not necessarily organic. There's certainly a significant number of local producers use organic production methods, but they are not the same.
Now, Scott mentioned, and I know that this is part of the overall plan as well, he mentioned getting local food into institutions like schools and universities. And Michelle, I know that's part of the movement that you've been involved in as well. And of course, a lot of people are involved in that part of the movement because they want school lunches to be healthier. But what are the other benefits of working with these academic institutions?
Well, yes, we did start a farm-to-school program this year, one of, I think, now 11 in the state. And we are one of that. We're working with Iowa City Community School District, which is one of the largest school districts in the state, to have a farm-to-school program. However, the farm-to-school program has very little resources in general from the state and the federal budget. In fact, it wasn't. The budget itself was not renewed for this year. However, the objectives of our chapter are to get kids thinking about where their food comes from and how it's grown, provide hands-on food activities for school students, such as school gardens, in-class cooking demonstrations, also help kids make healthy food choices and add more local foods to school meals and snacks, which ultimately will support the local food economy.
Well, that sounds terrific from a parent's perspective or from a teacher's perspective, but it also seems like a difficult hurdle since, as Andrew mentioned earlier, schools need food only a certain part of the year, and it's not actually during the growing season. So Rich, what can the state do, or what can a food coordinator do to help with that kind of a program and that kind of facilitate that?
Well, in addition to the local food program coordinator funding, the only other request we made for any state funding in the first year was to put back some funding into the Iowa Farm to School program. And as Michelle had noted, it had not been funded in the previous year. And a modest amount of funding in that program, given the passage of the National Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act, or the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, there is $5 million per year that will be mandated in funding for farm-to-school programs. We already have 11 of these farm-to-school chapters, as Michelle noted. A very modest amount of money would send a really positive signal and would increase Iowa's opportunities to get more of those federal funds to start more programs. In addition, we have another recommendation in there for a pilot program to provide local incentives to help the difference in the cost, so that the farmer entering into that agreement may be able to get a little bit more money for those fruits and vegetables that they sell. Now, with any program, it's not going to be a permanent thing, but it will help folks figure out how to make these arrangements with farmers to be a win-win.
All right. We're talking about the Iowa Local Food and Farm Plan today, put together by the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State. My guests are Rich Pirog from the Leopold Center, Michelle Kenyon-Brown from the Johnson County Local Food Alliance, and Andrew Dunham from Grinnell Heritage Farm. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about the Iowa Local Food and Farm Plan. It was put together by a coalition, but put forth by the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University. It's been sent to the state legislature. My guests today are Rich Pirog. He's Associate Director of the Leopold Center, Michelle Kenyon-Brown, Executive Coordinator of the Johnson County Local Food Alliance, and Andrew Dunham, a fifth-generation farmer and also the proprietor of Grinnell Heritage Farm. And Rich, I want to get back to you. We've talked about many of the things put forth in this plan, but there are 34 recommendations. And one of the recommendations in the plan is to help facilitate minority farmers and women farmers who want to start up this kind of operation. Why is that important?
Well, for a number of reasons. Women farmers own a lot of the land in the state of Iowa. And when we look at our various minorities, there are a number of aspiring farmers that would like to farm and may be doing a little gardening on the side, but may want to move beyond that and start an enterprise where they sell to others as well. And it was in the Des Moines Register in November that in the state of Iowa, Latinos started the highest percentage. There were more new businesses started by Latinos than any other ethnic group in the state in 2010. So we want to make sure that the opportunities for women and minorities are there and being able to either to start or to grow these enterprises. And not only with more culturally appropriate in the case of minorities and other incentives for training and education, but also in some of our programs that target women and minorities in our small business loan programs, we want to be able to work with those agencies to make sure they can connect with some of the audiences we work with. And as we went around the various agencies and educational institutions and farm groups, we got a lot of really positive feedback about our draft recommendations. And I think a number of the agencies that can make some changes, like in the case of the targeted minority and women, the small business loan programs, to be able to help work with those kind of producers and entrepreneurs, they're more than willing to do that. We just got to make connections across agencies and organizations to help them out.
Do we need to rethink our definition of what a farm is? I know a lot of these operations that provide fruits and vegetables to a local farmer's market or even do community-supported agriculture. Andrew was mentioning that they don't have a lot of land, although they have almost 80 acres, which That's a lot if you're trying to start up and you don't have a lot of funds. Do we need to think a lot more about smaller farms, 5-acre, 10-acre, 15-acre farms?
Well, certainly when we're talking about fruits and vegetables, I think that's part of that reality. You don't necessarily need 1,000 acres of mixed fruits and vegetables enterprises to sustain a family. I think all of these different types of farms, you know, they have a place here in Iowa. And the smaller ones, you know, as we look at, again, some of our minority farmers, you know, that may be an excellent place for them to start. And so the other issue here that I think it's important to bring up is both local food farmers and conventional farmers both have a significant number of them have jobs off of the farm. So somebody like Andrew, who's able to make it full time on the farm, that's great. But there's also opportunities for part time farmers, and whether it's local food or conventional farming, you know, we have a lot of part time farmers. So yes, we do need to expand and redefine that definition.
Andrew, as someone who has a successful CSA, do you have people who come to you and ask you for advice, people who want to start up a similar operation?
The organization Practical Farmers of Iowa, PFI, just had their annual conference in Marshalltown, and there were a number of people who were talking about starting up a CSA, and we had quite extensive discussions about how and some of the things that you need to be aware of before you do start one. So it's talked about quite a lot.
What do you hear from those people about the obstacles that they feel are in their way to starting something like that?
A general lack of accessible knowledge, I would say, is a pretty big hurdle. Being able to manage, you know, 40 to 60 different crops and have them come in a timely fashion in quantities that are sufficient to sustain the number of shares that you've sold, and then at the same time be able to harvest them appropriately, store them appropriately, and get them out in a timely fashion is quite a logistical undertaking. So I think a lot of people just need, you know, they'd like to have a little more information available or more internship opportunities prior to starting one.
Rich, is that kind of thing, that need being met in this plan?
Definitely. There are a number of recommendations that talk about training, education on all facets, whether we're talking about aggregation and distribution, food safety, business planning. And as Andrew's mentioned, you have great organizations like Practical Farmers of Iowa providing leadership in that area, as well as Extension and other organizations. And we just need more intense, coordinated efforts to make these things happen. And we also need to get the bankers more on board. And what they see, they're you know, logically, they see these as risky operations. And when we did the research on the plan and getting the feedback, they told us, we need to see workable business plans for local food enterprises to see that they cash flow. Then we'll be willing to make more loans. So we need more of those types of business plans, that the model business plans that we can share with lenders. And I think that will be a tremendous help. That's in the plan.
Can I interject?
Sure.
When it comes to another hurdle, we talked about hurdles before. One of the biggest hurdles that we have, where corn and soybean operators do have an advantage, is that they're able to purchase crop insurance. And for really small growers, I don't know if this is necessarily as important as it is to someone like me, where we're fully employed on farm, but there is no vegetable crop insurance available. And we're starting to make investments in our fields. When you talk about 10, 20, 30 acres of produce, you're outlaying a lot of capital at the beginning of the season, and it is a pretty big risk. And without that insurance, we, you know, corn and soybean operators can use this year's crop as collateral to get a loan. And in vegetables, you don't have that option. So for bankers, it is a riskier loan because they have, you know, if we have a flood or you lose all of your crop, you might not have any income that year. So that's a huge hurdle.
Rich, is that something that you're able to address?
We definitely looked into crop insurance in the recommendations in the plan. The options include federal crop insurance and other states. Unfortunately, not Iowa, have an option called AgriLite. And we looked into it would be really great if the state of Iowa were able to adopt AgriLite as other states were. But because our recommendations needed to be at the state level, we were not charged with making any federal recommendations. We did not include a specific recommendation around crop insurance. We do have recommendations, however, around liability insurance for the producers.
We have a question by email from Jim in Monticello. He says he wants to know if the report addresses food safety issues. We touched on that briefly, but he says it seems that this is one of the bigger obstacles in establishing the local foods movement. And Rich, how do you respond to that?
We have six recommendations that are related to food safety. And because, again, because this is so important for producers, not only for fruit and vegetable growers, but producers of other foods as well. And so not only do we have the audit incentive program as a recommendation and good ag practices or food safety training, we also have recommendations like putting a local food farmer on the state's food safety task force so that local food farmers have input into the kind of recommendations and the kind of materials that are generated in the state. We looked at food safety from every possible angle. And one other thing we looked at, and there's a recommendation in there both from standpoint of food safety and other environmental regulations, to investigate those recommendations and to investigate the scale appropriateness of them so that there is not really high transaction costs or other kind of compliance costs for our small producers.
Rich, this plan was asked for, was commissioned by the state legislature, but there have been a lot of political changes since it was commissioned. What does it need to get implemented?
Well, the plans are requested by the state legislature for many different issues. As I've said already, we've taken very seriously the request that it be actionable. Each recommendation says why it's important, who would actually do the work, where would the resources come from, and what the benefits would be. In my interactions with legislators over the last several months, as was heard earlier in the segment with Kathleen, there does seem to be bipartisan support in passing some kind of local food legislation this year. And we hope that the plan with, it's well thought out, it's pragmatic, it only has modest funding requests. We're looking at doing it more entrepreneurially, have an entrepreneurial spirit to be able to implement many of the recommendations. We think that it's a great template and a great starting point for the legislature to think of recommendations. About 8 of the 34 recommendations require legislation. Many of the other recommendations that are educational in nature would not necessarily require the state to take any action, but would require those organizations named to be able to find resources to implement those particular strategies.
Right now, in many areas, the local foods movement is it's a grassroots movement. It's somewhat political, but it's a popular movement. People are excited about it. And I'm wondering, you're sort of looking at the flip side of this with the nuts and bolts of making a local food economy possible. Michelle, you're more involved in getting people excited about local foods and getting people, individuals, to make a difference. How important do you think it is to educate the grassroots and get people involved in this movement?
Absolutely. It's essential to the local foods movement. We have worked with the Buy Fresh, Buy Local campaign, which is a national campaign that markets local foods. We market any restaurant, grocer, food distributor, or institution that purchases local foods. We have a high consumer demand for local foods, and we need more local foods to fulfill that demand, even in a local food hotspot like Iowa City.
How do you get people really fired up about it? What do you tell people?
Well, one of the main ways is just to talk about the farmer it comes from, where it's from. They know the state. They know the area. They're happy to say this carrot came from Grinnell Natural Heritage Farm, from Andy Dunham's farm. And, they also love to visit farms and get a chance to meet the goats that provide their goat cheese. So I think, a lot of personal interaction is important to the local food movement.
Well, Rich, in this plan, you're depending on people who are excited about local foods and who make it part of their identity that they buy local foods to support the state coordinator. You're hoping that people will buy the bumper stickers and buy the license plate and invest their money. So as this becomes more ingrained in our culture and part of our policies. How do you keep that excitement of the local foods movement alive?
You keep it alive by seeing success and by seeing performance. And that comes on many fronts. As Michelle talked about, we need to make it visible for consumers, but we also need to make it visible for those that are economic leaders at the local level, county supervisors, economic development folks, mayors, other community leaders, other organizations. They need to see that a local food economy is a good complement to the rest of Iowa's ag economy. It's not really in competition with it. We, you know, just for fruits and vegetables alone, if we supplied all our fruits and vegetables locally, it would only be a part of one county. So it doesn't take a tremendous amount of land, but for those producers that are involved in local foods, the returns can be a lot higher. And we have shown through some of our own research that we can get some modest increases in labor income and jobs by increasing local food production and marketing. So we need to be able to have these funds to get things started, or really seed funds, to be able to perform, to attract other investments, not only from federal grant funding, but from investors in the state, to be able to build that economy so that we have more of those kind of incentives and structures in place for loans, for grants, for opportunities to create larger businesses. These items, whenever we're talking about any kind of business cluster, are always necessary. We also need to have the research and education assistance as part of that. So building a whole package around a local foods economy is what this plan is intending to do. And again, we're very pragmatic. We're not asking for the state to pay for all the costs. I think we're only asking them to pay a fraction.
Right now, 14% of the food eaten in Iowa is grown in Iowa. If you had to pick a target for the future, what would that target be, and by when?
We chose not to make a specific recommendation, like by 2020, half of the food would be local. And the numbers that we use, even the number that you've quoted there, which is in our plan, there are very few of those numbers. So we want to be able to collect some benchmark data right away in the first year or two to track our progress. And I think what we want to see in general is not only increase in local food production and consumption, we want to see increase in the number of markets that producers have access to. We want to see increases in the kind of products that are processed in the state, that where we can add value to local foods and again, bring more dollar to circulating in the economy. So we need to be able to perform in some of those ends. We'd like to see more local food farm-to-school chapters, more institutions buying local food. All of those kind of things are measurable, and as we show those and we have benchmarks and we show success, I think we'll see more investment and even more support.
Well, Rich, I hope you'll come back and keep us updated as you see changes in the future.
I hope so, too. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks a lot. Rich Pirog is Associate Director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University. Michelle Kenyon-Brown, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Charity.
Michelle Kenyon-Brown is Executive Coordinator of the Johnson County Local Food Alliance. And Andrew Dunham is proprietor of Grinnell Heritage Farm. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Ryan Garvey. Technical support comes from Russell Mansky and Ames today. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up tomorrow, Live Healthy Iowa in its 10th year. We'll talk about a healthier state. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.
This is Pat Blank. Each weekday afternoon at 4, my Iowa Public Radio colleagues and I bring you the local